Blog Talk Radio.
And Lampard hit!
Good long throw there by Patton. Holton was really stretching for that one. Fred's jumping well for it. Billy Bond. Oh, no! My God! Matthew
Ball coming in here for West Ham. Going to fall to one of them. It just might be Colton goal. Batshay!
Players cross. Over Cunningham. De Canio! Oh, I do not believe
it. Antonio is bursting forward again. And he's beaten two. And he's beaten three. And he's clean.
And when I say my family, that's what I mean. Every West Ham fan out there is my family, and thank you, and we'll see you next season.
Welcome to the first ever episode, the debut of the Ironworks. I'm here with Charlie. Tommy, you guys with me?
Can you hear me?
Oh my sweet Lord, there you are.
Okay, so that's good. You can. Okay, hello. You all right?
Hello. How's everybody? Tommy, you there, buddy? Well, that's working out. I guess it's just you and me right now, Charlie. We're going to let Tommy figure it out. We decided to go live with our first episode because we're dangerous like that. And we figured, what the hell? We're just going to dive head first.
We're all about risks here. We love risks. Give me a risk, I'll take a risk. Do you know what I mean? I see a cliff. Going to walk a little bit too close to it, then walk away, because I like risks. That's how I roll.
Well, actually, you're the one I wanted to speak about first. And for those of you that don't know or are new with us, we're the Ironworks. We're with SB Nation, Brace the Hammer, bracethehammer.com, where we cover all things West Ham United. And today was the debut, the premiere, the film premiere of Iron Men. Which saw, I guess if you want to give a submission, you saw the movie, Charlie, so you could probably speak to it most, but they had players there. I saw David Gold was there, a whole bunch of stuff. What was happening?
Yeah, so Iron Men is a sort of documentary film about the sort of last couple of games at Upton Park, essentially. There was a premiere tonight, the London premiere. I believe there was actually one in Hollywood as well. Not a full-blown one held by a West Ham fan. But, yeah, so it was a London premiere tonight, which, like you say, a lot of West Ham, most of the first team was there, actually. Got to speak to a few of them, thankfully. Luckily, I should say. David Gold was there. There was a few famous West Ham fans, people like Ray Winston, who an actor. There's a guy who used to be on some reality shows, a couple of famous West Ham fans there. And yeah, it was quite the event. It was a bit surreal, to be honest.
So, wait, which players did you actually get to speak to?
So, I spoke to Jose Fonte, Sam Byram. Honestly, it all went a bit quick. I don't actually remember fully, which sounds insane, but it's the case. But Jose Fonte, Sam Byram. I spoke to someone else, but I don't remember. I actually legitimately don't remember. It's been a bit of an insane day. It's been a bit.
How do you even say that situation, though? Like, how do you open up a conversation with them?
It's awkward, to say the least. I mean, we're sort of standing in the media pit, or whatever you want to call it, and they get all their photos taken by the board thing, and then they walk past and they get interviewed by, there was me, TalkSport was next to me, Skorka was there, like the next one down, and so there's all these like media organizations and stuff. I'm standing there by myself, and so...
Were you in your unicorn top?
Oh my God, what a man.
Oh, Tommy.
I was waiting. I was just, I wanted to know if he was in his unicorn top.
It's really not a Charlie appearance without the unicorn shirt, is it?
I'd been given strict instructions that I was not allowed to wear the unicorn top. And unfortunately, it was also in the wash. So I couldn't even be a rebel and go against it like I usually would. So no, I was in a polo shirt, black jumper. Interesting. But
when I was looking at pictures on Twitter, I figure I'd see more people in like West Ham gear, but not everybody's like super dressed up. I guess it was like a big fancy thing.
Yeah, I mean, given the fact that we're I had this feeling when I left, I had this just all of a sudden it clicked for me that like I've just seen a documentary film about West Ham and like Mark Noble and there was a premiere for it. It was all just very weird, very not West Ham. And everyone was sort of, not in a bad way, but just like everyone was dressed up to their Sunday best and whatnot.
Well, that was great to see. This episode almost did not happen at all. I had a last minute dentist appointment like 2 hours ago. And luckily I told them to do everything they can not to possibly give me any type of anesthetic. So I don't sound like I'm stuttering or slurring or anything. So hopefully everything's going well. And then on the way home, I stopped for Taco Bell as a celebration. Do you guys have Taco Bell in London? I know you have everything.
Yeah, we do. Well, we have it. We have it. Not in London. I haven't seen many in London, but up north where I'm currently living, station, there's loads in Sheffield and Leeds. So
wait, they have Taco Bells in Leeds?
Yeah, honestly.
Really?
That's my, yeah, mate. When I was at uni, back in Sheffield, every lunchtime, pop out for a nice little student discount, maybe una cerveza. With a little what do you call it, a Corona and a taco. Oh yeah, burrito. Yeah, they did them all the time. It was absolutely beautiful.
That's amazing. Going back to Ironman, did anybody talk about missing the bowling ground, anything like that, or was it really just more of like a celebration, everybody hanging out, having a good time? Was it like a serious atmosphere?
No, it was very jovial. It was weird watching it with a cinema full of theatre screen full of West Ham fans as well. You know, like obviously the first team were there and some other people, but it was full of West Ham fans. And when Dimitri Payet came on the screen, for example, for the first time, the entire audience started booing and making hissing sounds. So it was a very sort of like, it wasn't a serious atmosphere whatsoever. But I asked a few of the players, you know, what they thought about the atmosphere at the new ground, and obviously, as media trained as they would be, they were very positive about it and stuff. But I think
what are they really going to say? It's awful. We hate.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to speak to someone like Adrian, myself and Gio, who also writes for Brace the Hammer and runs Hammer's Chat. We had spoken about it beforehand, and I really wanted to ask Adrian because he had this almost love affair with the lower stands at Upton Park. Just running, just celebrating with them when goals went in. I wanted to grab a question from him. I wanted to ask him, you know, do you miss that at the stadium? Because you are so far away from the fans. Unfortunately, he went and spoke to someone else instead of me. I don't know why. I'm a lovely person. But
I have a question for you, though. Did anybody laugh when the crowd started booing Dimitri Payet? Was there anybody that it raised a smile with anybody? Carol, Noble, Fonte, anybody?
Oh, I couldn't see them from my position. They were sort of, it was a very nice cinema in Stepney Green, but there's the lower bit that the players were on was just out of my view line. I couldn't quite see where they were. I can tell you for a fact that I giggled. I won't lie about it. But I mean, the film treads the line very, very nicely between hitting really sort of emotional notes. Especially,
you know, I think it's ridiculous. I got to wait 3 weeks to actually see this film. Is it not digital anywhere? Like I'll watch it on my computer.
iTunes.
Oh, it's going to be on iTunes.
Yeah.
Nice. So are we though?
Yeah. Well, we're hot shots now. We're hot shots now. But yeah, no. I think the film it treads a really nice line between emotional, like looking at that last game at Upton Park again. You know, I asked a few of the people after, I interviewed some fans after, and they all agreed with me that they were close to tears at that point. And sometimes it's just really funny. Like, I'm not going to ruin the film for people who weren't lucky enough to go tonight and are looking forward to watching it, but there's, like, just some stuff that Mabel comes out with. Mabel, if you don't know, who's a 100-year-old West Ham fan.
Yeah.
And just some of the words she comes out with are just unbelievable. It's just so good. Ray Winston's in it, and he's fantastic. I spoke to Ray Winston. I spoke to Ray Winston today. What's going on? What a man he is. But yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. I really do. If you're a West Ham fan, I think I highly recommend it. And even if you're just a football fan who's interested in football history, I think it does. It really represents those last games and the feeling that everyone had really well.
You know, I'm just going to stop you there. We actually have some calls in queue. Not even kidding. So we are going to pick one up right now. Hello there. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Good. Who's this?
This is Lauren from Babylon.
What's up, Lauren? How can I help you? Do you have a question for these fine-looking lads?
Yes. Yes, I do. I just want to say I'm a big fan already.
Nice.
And I want to get to a topic that I feel like is probably on a lot of fans' minds that I want to bring to the table. I know it's only our first night, but I was wondering if you were going to be doing any, like, giveaways where maybe you'd, like, win a date with, like, David Beckham or something like that.
Great question. Tom, you want to take that one?
Charlie, you can have that one, mate.
So we all want a date with David Beckham. You know, I want a date with him. If I could just spend 5 minutes with him, I would. Do you know what I mean? Just
that he's called Golden Balls for a reason.
Right. Like, he's not doing much right now. I mean, he probably has time.
That's not an awful idea. If we could somehow set that up, he is in the U.S. Isn't he in Miami? Isn't that where he lives these days?
I thought, yeah, he was doing some sort of MLS franchise over in Miami. I don't know whether that's still a thing.
You know what we will do, though? I think we'll give away a date with Tommy or Charlie.
I will say this now. Well, I'm taken, but I know for a fact Tom isn't.
Win a date with Tommy.
The Twitter links are all there. You can check me out.
Thanks, Lauren. We appreciate it. She brings up a good question. Is anybody as good looking as David Beckham on West Ham United?
I don't know. I really want to speak to him about his grooming regime, really. I just want to, you know, he gets his beard so on point. I just want to know.
I think, although he's not a prolific member of his squad, I think Arbeloa, with them Spanish looks and that Spanish charm, the way he talks sometimes,
it's amazing.
He's beautiful. I saw him once. Yeah, his jawline.
Not that I've given a lot of thought about this previously.
It's the first time I've thought about it as well.
Right, but I like how we both like settled on Arbeloa. That was the first ones we came to. We actually have someone else on the line too. It's starting to heat up. I'm just waiting for someone to come and prank us. So this would be great.
I'm expecting
Georgia
any minute now.
Person, you are on the air. I guess we're not really on the air. You're on the internet.
Hey, longtime fan, first time caller. I'm Andy from Maryland.
Andy from Maryland, you sound really familiar. Are you a writer, a fantastic writer for GraceTheHammer.com?
I happen to be, except I haven't written in a long time. I have a question for the staff, though. I want to know the opinion, I guess, of dropping Fletcher from the bench, even. Is that worrying to you guys? Because I know Kyrie hasn't been the best, I guess, this season so far.
Do you know what? For me, Andy from Maryland, in a way, I think when we bought Fletcher, he was obviously a buy for the future. And although he's certainly got a lot of talent there, I think he proved that on loan at Barnsley. Obviously, he scored in the what was it now? I think it was the League One playoff final, I think, to bring him back up to the Championship. And the good goal, really, he scored against Man United. But when I look at Fletcher, I don't still see he's sort of fully grown into that physical build that he has. I think the games that we've watched him play in, he gets bashed about quite a bit by the defenders. You know, he doesn't seem Premier League ready at this point. And although, obviously, I think he has a higher ceiling than someone like Kyrie, I think he still probably needs a little bit of time to almost just to gain some confidence. Like the likes of, you know, we've stuck Burke out and Cullen and people like that, and they've performed out on loan. I think it's the same with Fletcher. I think it's been difficult for him all season because he's been pushed in the team and he's been taken out of the team. And I think Slav should have probably realised before the season started what he wanted to do with Fletcher. And I was almost certain that he would have gone out on loan, even in January, you know, that somebody like Leeds would have come and picked him up, because we have so many strikers available to us, or so many people can play that position. You know, we've, even in the last few games, we've seen Snodgrass play up there as well, away at Southampton. So it must be disheartening for him. But at the same time, I think he has a high ceiling.
Wouldn't you say that like Caleri was kind of pushed around and kind of manhandled when he came on West Brom against West Brom? He was like thrown around like he didn't even know what was happening. He was like, and he kept looking at the ref throwing his hands up. I'm like, I get you're frustrated, but you have like such few opportunities. You figure he'd show a little bit more out there.
Well, I think for me, it's, you know, Chiari, although he's not really had his opportunities, and you know, he seems a decent player. He's not really had the chances to show that. He's not going to be here, I don't think, after next season. You know, although Slav says he sees him as part of his first team plans, he's probably not going to be here after next season. Fletcher probably is. He's probably going to be here for the next few years. And for me, is if Caleri was just to see out the season and play the remainder of the games, I would have, like I said, would have much rather have seen Fletcher going out on loan, building his confidence up. Like Antonio Martinez, you know, we've seen how well he's played in the Premier League 2 this year. He's got a chance to go play at Oxford, and he's absolutely balling out there, whether it be through goals or assists. You know, he's proven that, and I think the same thing could have happened for Fletcher, because otherwise now there's going to be people like Ayew, Caleri, people that are probably going to be picked on the bench over him, and he's just got to sit there and almost twiddle his thumbs and wait for the
summer.
He must
really be regretting not going to Leeds.
Oh yeah, massively. And I think if Leeds weren't, you know, if Chris Wood over at Leeds wasn't scoring so much, I think probably there might have been a chance for him to move. But I mean, I would openly criticise Slaven for not dealing with him in the manner in which he should have done, because I do think that a player like that could have been really, it could have been brilliant for him just to go out and loan to the Championship, like I said, and gain some confidence. And unfortunately, he's not done that, and he's just been sort of left to sit and dwell. And now he's obviously been dropped from the first team.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say I basically agree with what Tom's saying. I think we've got a horrendous amount of strikers in the team at the moment. Just not even just straight up strikers, also people who can play up front. And I think the problem with Fletcher is obviously he's going to have to jump ahead of all of those people. What Tom says about, you know, Caleri not being here after something is very true. But if you do loan him out, then you run the risk of him not playing, like maybe Reece Oxford at Reading, for example. And I think he's really unfortunate, because every time he has played, he puts everything on the line. He runs, he links up well, he's quicker than he looks for his size. I think most people, when he first joined, might think maybe he's just a heading merchant just because of his size, but that's simply not the case. He makes really good runs, his movement is fantastic, he links up really well. And I think earlier on in the season, that was something we really, really could have done with. Unfortunately for him, obviously, Andrew Charles coming back into play. And so it sucks for him that he's had to drop back down, but honestly, I think he's not going to get off on the bench anyway. You know what I mean? Caleri will get in ahead of him, and that's just unfortunately the way it is at the moment, because we have so many strikers, and it's not going to get much better after the summer, because Saka might
actually
be fit
for one. It's only going to get longer.
Exactly, because we're supposedly looking for one. Saka might actually be fit for once, and then Enner Valencia comes back as well. So we're going to have to contend with a whole other host of things, and Martinez. So it's going to be congested, to say the least.
Well, Andy, what do you think? Who would you like to see on the bench, Andy? Would you rather, if you had to choose between, let me give you three names. If you had to choose between, let's say, Caleri, Tony Martinez, and Fletcher, who would make the team for you?
Caleri, if I could have Fletcher out on loan. I love Martinez out on loan. I like the confidence building he gets, being like an integral part of that first team. I guess I don't like how Fletcher has to, I guess it was Charlie, twiddle his thumbs. You know, that's definitely not going to help him at all. If Bilic had the opportunity to send him out on loan, which I think he did, he should have taken that. Now, the fact that Caleri isn't going to be here next year makes me want to prioritize Fletcher's feelings a little bit. It's, I guess, the other side of the argument. So I guess maybe Fletcher on the bench, instead of Caleri.
Just from a fully upside point of view?
Yeah, because Caleri is not going to be here next year. I don't really feel like we should risk maybe hurting Fletcher's development in that regard.
Yeah, no, he's definitely already sent his luggage to Sao Paulo. He's just ready for the plane to board. Well, thank you, Andy. I really appreciate it. You calling in. I like that you're a longtime fan, first time caller. Really appreciate that.
Yeah. Are there any other callers? Because I have another question if you're good.
Oh, boy. Well, now you're just eating up airtime. Go ahead. What's your next question there?
Oh, my bad. I just wonder, with IU coming back scoring last game, where do you fit him into the lineup? Where do you fit Snodgrass in? Lanzini, does that push Snodgrass in the wing with IU? Because you assume Antonio has to be in there. Now that Carroll's probably fit for Chelsea. You know, there's so many attacking options that where do you fit all these guys?
Where do you fit
anybody on this team?
I've got the answer. We drop Antonio. Next question.
Stay away from that man.
£70,000 a week. I don't think they're dropping Antonio.
Do you know what? For me, I think this really actually ties in quite well with the last question. With as much as you know, Fletcher and Chiari, we have too many attacking options, and this boils probably down to the fact that there were a lot of panic buys towards the end of the window. And I think you said a second ago, who would you choose between Calera and Fletcher? Of course, it would have to be Fletcher. Although the two of them being bought, they don't really make sense. You know, with Chiari was sort of bought as another option, even though we had some. And Fletcher, when I saw Fletcher being bought, I thought, you know, Keener, Martinez, Brown, they were focused on this youth setup, Holland, and they all got a chance playing in the under 20s and 19s or wherever it was, the under 23s and the Premier League too. And I thought that's where Fletcher would predominantly play. And I think that could have benefited Fletcher more, playing down that level than sort of what he's had thrown at him so far. So, but this is, you know, it's very well, you know, all and good having a plethora of attacking options when you're playing, but there is, unfortunately for us, there is too many. And like Charlie said, we've still got Sacco to come back. We've still got Valencia to come back in the summer, and there's obviously going to have to be a clear out.
You know what the biggest question that comes out of all of this, though, is? And I didn't mean to go into this so early, but Andy Carroll, like, with all these other attacking options, and the way I look at it is, if you wanted to put, let's say, like an alphanumeric grade onto all of our attacking options, they're all like C pluses, B minuses, maybe, but we don't have like that B plus and A. And we do. His name's Andy Carroll, but he's only, you know, if he starts on Monday, it's only going to be his 10th start all year.
Yeah.
His 10th. And yeah. We're already in March. So, I mean, even if everybody else is healthy, you kind of have to take a look and be like, is this where we kind of part ways? I mean, with everything that's happening?
I still maintain, you know, that it's right, though, and what, you know, Andy was saying, who does play where? Because, you know, you've got Snodgrass, Antonio, Fuguli, Ayu, Carroll, Lanzini, centre mids, Kiati, Obiang, Noble. It's like just trying to play chess. It's just which piece goes where for which game. And it's funny because at the minute, after Payet's left, everybody seems to be playing so well, you know, and it's almost like we can't drop Fuguli going into the next couple of games because he scored and he assisted the other week, or Lanzini, but Lanzini's been on fire. Ayu scored last week. Oh, will that mean you get in next week? Well, no, because Snodgrass's attacking work rate was brilliant the other day and the chances he created, you know. So it's difficult for Slaven at the minute, having all these players that he has to try and fit his squad around. But as for someone like Carroll, you know, I think there has come a point where you have to say enough is enough. And I know he's been fantastic for us on his day when he wants to be. He's a fantastic striker. He's absolutely unplayable. And I think nobody would question that. His aerial ability is second to none, probably the best in the world.
Statistically, he's one of the best in the league when he plays.
Yeah, but this is the thing. He is so good, but he is so injury prone. And it's not a joke really anymore. After 4 years with the money that we spent on him, he should be playing more. I think I saw a stat the other week about the cumulative games that he's played for us. I think he's only just hit 100 games or something like that. Do you know, in 4 years, and it's, although he is, you know, a fantastic striker, if China or somebody like that was to come in for him and say 20, 25, 30 million, whatever, I would absolutely accept it, because I feel
25 is the number for you.
Well, this is the thing. I would have probably said 15, but then when it's leaked out that China come through and say, oh, 32 for Carroll, of course you would want to take 32 for Carroll. But, you know, I feel as if that money could be reinvested, especially if China come in, could be reinvested somewhere else. Because, like we said, we've been waiting 4 years for Carroll to be healthy. And although, yes, the games that he's played this season, he's been spectacular. You know, that goal against Crystal Palace was just, it was world class. But yeah, we need to see that for 38 games a year, not just 15. And it is brilliant for the 15 games we do have him. But unfortunately, when you're playing at the top level, you need someone like that playing week in, week out and consistently. And for me, I've sort of come to the end of my tether, and I would just like to probably see that money reinvested somewhere else as long as it was going to be spent right.
I think that's
the real problem.
If it's going to be spent right, because the problem is, you know, you say you take 15 from Carroll, which is fair, given his injury record, but what does 15 million get you? It gets you Scott Hogan, possibly. And is like, Scott Hogan, I wanted us to take a punt on him. I like him, I like the pace, I like bringing players up from the Championship, I'm all about that. But is Scott Hogan...
Hurt?
He did get hurt, because of course he didn't link to West Ham. But, like, with someone, like, that's the calibre of player we're talking about. We're talking about taking a risk on someone. We're not talking about someone who is guaranteed to be as good as they are, even though he's never fit. But when he is fit, like, we are not going to be able to get anyone anywhere near that calibre for that amount of money. You know, you're looking at... We're talking about Daniel Sturridge for 25 million, who's just as injury prone, or someone else of that calibre, and it's a huge problem. Where do we reinvest that money? So for me, I mean, I would keep Carroll unless, like, 25 would be my number. If someone put 25 on the table, I would take it. But up until that point, you're getting like ums and ahs from me. And I think that's the problem, is the reinvestment part of it. We can take that money, but A, I don't particularly trust the people who take that money to spend it. But B, I don't know how much that actually gets you anymore. And that's a ginormous problem.
Yeah, I mean, even money aside, what respectable striker is going to step into this situation knowing that they're going to lose a lot of their match time, their pitch time, with Carroll just sitting around waiting to also get on? It's just so congested, and it's not attractive to people. So even if you had the money to spend on strikers, who wants to do it when they can go somewhere else and be, you know, first choice every match all year round? So it's kind of rough. Andy, what do you think? You're the one that asked the question.
I mean,
what would you like to see?
First choice all year round. You see Liverpool, Man United, the big clubs pulling these guys like Batshuayi, and they're sitting on the bench. They're not even first choice. I don't think it's as much of them being worried about, I guess, sitting on the bench for the whole year. I think it's more maybe the money. Maybe we're not willing to offer the same amount of money those clubs are. Maybe West Ham's just not as attractive as Chelsea is, you know? So I don't think, if it's the latter of the two, I don't think there's really a way to fix it until we prove that we can be a top-half team year in, year out.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're talking about, like, the super elite names, that's always going to be an issue. But if you're talking about, let's say, Michy, Batshuayi, and I don't want to bring it up, but Zaza, guys like that, I mean, we'll always be in contention for those guys.
Well, this is the thing, it's weird, is because I still think that Zaza can play well, just
yes,
not
me
with
too.
Us. And the thing is, and I think it's unfortunate that it didn't work out for him at West Ham, and, you know, he was one to take the punt blame and say, oh yeah, you know, it was down to me or whatever. But I also heard his comments from saying, you know, the fitness regime and how we do training over here is completely different to what they do in Italy and over in Spain. And I think that is quite telling that is, you know, is different. And he was shocked to see the level of training compared to what he's used to, you know, because it was so light. I think for someone like Zaza, that might have been the reason why potentially he didn't perform. But I still think he could be a top striker. I think Batshuayi could be a top striker. I still think that we can attract big names. You know, we have the stadium is a fantastic asset, although it's taken a while to get used to. You know, when you've seen interviews with people like Snodgrass and Fonte, although I guess, yes, might be slightly media trained, but that's got to be attractive for some people to want to come and play in front of 50,000, 55,000 fans a week, you know? And I still think with the way that the TV market deal is going, you know, and especially being a London club, it's not like it's somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, Hull or Norwich or something. Not an attractive place. It's London. That is another massive pull. So I do think that hopefully that the owners realise that, you know, that to not get bang for their buck and actually go out and put their money where their mouth is. So I still think that we in a few years we will have a place that we can, you know, compete with the big boys, but I think it certainly relies with the owners to be able to stump up the cash and go out and get them. because, like I said, we've got some fantastic assets to offer and a real reason for people to want to come and play for us. So I think it just relies down to the owners to put their money where their mouth is.
I want to switch gears for a second and bring up Slaven Bilic. People have been asking him about his contract a lot lately. And today he said he doesn't mind going year to year just because of what happened to Ranieri. Do you think he really doesn't mind, or do you think he's just kind of saying that or playing up to the cameras and the journos around?
He's probably just saying it. I mean, all right, to a certain extent, he might mean it. He's a super down-to-earth person. He speaks incredibly well. Whenever I've heard him speak, you know, I can disagree with maybe what he does tactically, but then the second I hear him speak, I'm like, oh, Slaven Bilic, what a man. So maybe he is being legit. Maybe he's just saying, look, this is the way modern football is. If it means I can earn more money per week by saying I'm happy to sign a contract year by year basis, then maybe he is okay with it. But ultimately, he will be sitting there thinking, you know, especially when the rumours of Mancini are going on, he will be sitting there thinking, oh, crap, what's going to happen? What am I going to do? And that's not a perfect situation it's not a perfect situation in literally any sense apart from the money one. And we all know which one the owners will prioritise. It will be the money one. But will a player want to sign for someone who might not be here? Will a team want to galvanise around someone who might not be here? Will he want to try and galvanise a team if he might not be here? There's a lot of reasons why it's a bad thing. But you save a bit of money in the long run, therefore it's good.
Well, that was going to be my thing. Like, it shows a bit of instability, right? For anybody that wants to come and you have a manager going year to year, that means something could change at any moment, and that's not fun. And what's weird is because he's like one of the more popular managers. I mean, you ask a lot of fans, they're all on board for Slaven. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where's the support behind it? And what could possibly be the delay? If they said, we're just going to revisit this issue in the summer and they're not going to bring it up anymore, that would have like ended all of the questions, but they haven't. They've been like really kind of dodgy about the whole thing, right? I mean, so that's why people keep bringing it up and keep wondering, to the point where he's got to talk about it in press conferences instead of talking about Chelsea on Monday. Well, so it's something
that's clear, that's important to remember about our owners, is that they kind of like to pride themselves in the fact they've never sacked people, that they don't sack their managers. They like to say that, despite the fact what is actually true is that they let the managers' contract run out and then they just don't renew it. And so for them, they will always do this. They did it with Allardyce. They will do it with everyone. They would give someone a 2-year contract. They will wait until it runs down, and then they'll just give them year extensions if they can get away with it. It's what they always do. It's what they always will do. And I think when we're talking about contracts for Slaven Bilic specifically, we really do need to take that in mind and remember that, because it really does inform literally everything our owners do.
I still think, though, we spoke about this, myself, Charlie, and some of the Hammerstack guys, you know, we spoke about the fact that the board don't trust Bilic because of some of the signings that he made. You know, you think about last year, Emenike was one of his signings, Gokhan Touré was one of his signings. And I don't think that the board, per se, may not trust Bilic, we've said, with the large budget that he could have had last summer or that he might have going into this summer. And I still think it is a, you know, a real possibility that they're almost just waiting for Mancini, because I do see the board looking at Mancini and saying, okay, we're willing to give you this budget. You know, he was given that big budget at City. He's had that big budget at Inter, you know, and he signed the likes of Kondogbia and people like that for large amounts of money. He's willing to spend money, and he probably know, the board feel that he knows what he's doing with that money. And I still think that it's been dodgy, and it's been, you know,
but why not trust Bilic to do that? Because I feel like he wasn't in charge of those signings, and I feel like with some of them he didn't even want to sign in the first place. Gokhan Touré probably, right? Because they played he was his manager on Besiktas. But everybody else, like, you know, was he totally on board for these? I have no idea what goes on behind the scenes.
A lot of the signings that are made are David Sullivan signings,
exactly.
Yeah, and there's a few times when I think when he's almost like let the reins off and said, okay, here's a couple of players that I want to sign. I think that's, you know, don't forget, you know, Lanzini was his signing, and it's, I just, I, I still believe in my heart of hearts that they do not trust him fully 100%. And I think with Allardyce, it was, okay, let's steady the ship. Let's keep us safe from relegation. And then we move on. We part ways, we move on. And I think as much as I love Bilic, and I'd be first to tell you I want him to get that new contract, because I do believe I'd love to see him at the club for the next 10, 15 years. But I think for them, it's, okay, well, Slaven has, you know, shown us what he can do with this squad. He's got us into the top seven. We've moved into the new stadium. And I think now maybe the owners are sort of saying, right, well, we've now got a large backing of money. Let's take it to the next level and take someone like Mancini. And I still think that Slaven's job is after this summer. He may be here or he might not be here. But it just, the way that the board have set it up, it just doesn't look good for him right now. You know, because
it's crazy though, because like given the year that they've had with all the drama, all the bullshit, all that stuff with Payet, the terrible start, the early exit from Europe. I mean, take away the top six, right? And I know that's tough to do because, you know, whatever. But take away the top six. They're still like they're only right behind West Brom. They're still ahead of Stoke. They're still ahead of Southampton. They're still ahead of teams that some people may not have thought they might be. So, I mean, given everything that's happened, isn't this kind of a good, like, positive season in a way?
It's a positive season, yeah. But I think, you know, the telltale signs. I'll let Charlie go on in a second. But for me, the telltale signs was, at the end of January, when David Gold was speaking, and we highlighted this, so when David Gold was doing interviews or he's on social media, it was always the manager said, not the club, not us, it was the manager. Slaven Bilic wanted, the manager said. Do you know, and he was separating himself and he was making it crystal clear that it was Slaven Bilic that was doing stuff and not the owners and not the board, just categorically saying it's, you know, it's, he's making these decisions. And it's just, it is so weird because they haven't still publicly backed him to the hilt. And I still think they should have done that. But go on, I'll let Charlie.
I think there's a few things, right? I mean, what you speak about is true. And I think, not to bring up the fact that I was at a film premiere again, what? there was a Q&A with Slav and Mark after the film had finished, and they spoke very openly about the fact that towards the beginning of this season, especially, they had to deal with a hell of a lot behind the scenes, talking about atmosphere, talking about crowd troubles at stadium, all that sort of stuff, but also like Dimitri Payet and stuff like that. There was a lot of, they spoke very clearly that, you know, given the crap that we went through at the beginning, it's a decent season. I think Slaven Bilic handled the Dimitri Payet situation like to perfection, absolute perfection.
Perfectly. Nobody could have done it better, in my opinion.
There's literally not, you couldn't. It was perfect. And
but do you know why it was easy for him? He also had the backing of the rest of the team. Like, they were all behind him. So they were all kind of unified in this anti-Payet baby movement. So it made him look, it also helped him really good. But that's just another point in his corner, isn't it?
Who were the people who weren't behind him? Board. The board didn't like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. The board.
David Sullivan very openly said, I would just leave him rotting. Now, to be fair, I would have done the same, but that's besides the point, is that he openly disagreed with him. And then he said, well, we went by the manager's wishes. And then, as Tom said, they continuously said, the manager. You don't forget why they got rid of Allardyce in the first place. Like, there were obviously lots of reasons, but when they got rid of him and they brought in Bilic, one of the specific remits was because when Allardyce brought in players, he was in charge of a lot of the transfer policy back then. When he brought in players, they had no resale value. And they very openly said that. They very openly went, well, we're bringing in players who we can't sell on for more money. And again, that speaks a lot to the logic and mind of the board. But Bilic was brought in because he was willing to give away some of the transfer control to the owners. And the only two people who Bilic has brought in who you can say with 100% certainty it was a Bilic signing is Torre and Jelovic. Outside of that, no one else, right? The fact they're not backing him is ridiculous because he's super popular with fans. He's super popular with everyone else, including the media, including fans of other teams. I mean, his stint in the Euros is still spoken about in good terms. All it was just a punditry job, for goodness sake. And people go, oh, Bilic is well smart. Like, everyone likes him apart from the board. And honestly, it's like, why should they not? They have no reasons not to. He gives them transfer control. He's given them results on the pitch. He's controlling things fantastically. He is liked by everyone. There's no reason not to. But
it goes back to the start of his tenure. He was the sixth or seventh choice to be West Ham manager. Yeah. He was at the bottom of the list to start off with.
Yeah,
he completely was. We went for literally everyone else in the world before him. And the ironic thing is he ended up being probably the best situation because the club was horrendously out of favour with the fans. And then all of a sudden, Bilic came and everyone was like, actually, this is all right. So he was clearly the best choice, and yet he was their seventh choice. What does that tell you?
A lot. On that note, we're going to move on to something else he said during his early presser was that he's not rolling over for the new champs. And that kind of brings us to the, for the new self-declared champs anyway. That kind of brings us to the Chelsea match on Monday. I don't like Monday games. For one, because I'm in the U.S., these games are like 2 o'clock for me. And I'm at work. And I have to somehow sneak away. I hope nobody at work is actually listening. And try to put it on into like the bottom corner of my screen and hope my bosses don't walk by. So that's always a fun challenge for me. It's just really, really tedious. But do people like it in the UK?
Yeah.
They're like, yay. Yeah, because in the US, Monday Night Football is like this big thing and everybody loves it. But here, you know.
I was going to say, it's the same for us when we want to watch American football. It's the other way around, except there's ridiculous times of the morning. We absolutely love Monday Night Football because it's a chance to see Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher argue for an hour before the match starts. And that always makes it fun. Yeah, Monday Night Football over here is a big thing because it's out of all the Sky shows, it's the most analytical, and Carragher and Neville go at it for an hour, and it's usually good fun. So we don't mind Monday Night Football games over here.
Yeah, logistically it's a bit annoying, but the way they present it on television has been brilliant. Just like you said, like you mentioned, Gary Neville and Jeremy Carragher having a go at each other. It's really analytical. They've done everything they can to make it a really good watch for football fans, which helps because it's at a really awkward, difficult time, especially I'm going to the game on Monday, for example, and, you know, like that's a late night. I'm coming back late. I've got to do all these other things. It's a hassle to get to. But if you're just an average football fan watching from home, I mean, what else is there that's better on Monday nights, basically?
Charlie, do you know how many people listening right now feel bad for you, especially in the US, that you have to go to the game on Monday?
Listen, let me put it this way, right? You should, because I'm tired. I want to sleep. go. But I know, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very fortunate in that I'm unemployed. That's not fortunate, Charlie, that's bad. But you know what I'm trying to say. Most people who have work, you know, have to leave work early to get there. They have to get all the way to Stratford. It's difficult getting into Stratford, especially someone like Stratford, which is a big hub of work. When people are trying to get in there, where people are trying to get out at rush hour, it's a really difficult logistical nightmare. But if you're sitting at home just watching TV, then they've done a brilliant job in making it a really super good watchable football show that's really good for a football fan to watch. And like I said, there's literally nothing better on Mondays. So,
you know, it's funny. All week I've been hearing about the return of Victor Moses, and everybody always praises his work rate and how hard he tries and how he's like the heart and soul and all this stuff. And all I've heard from West Ham fans is like, that's great, but we saw none of that. Are you excited to kind of, in a weird way, stick it to him a little bit if you can? Or another thing, I got lost in the whole Ken Carroll coming back and getting excited that way. Mikel Antonio's on he's suspended for this match, isn't he?
He's not even gonna play. Yeah, he's suspended. Yeah, yeah, he got two daft yellow cards against Watford, so he's suspended.
Fantastic. So just to make things even more fun, but are you looking forward to seeing Victor Moses on the other side?
Do you know what? It really doesn't bother me one way or another. I knew how his loan would pan out before he even had it. It's the same wherever he's been. It's the same at Stoke. It's the same at Liverpool. He signed a long contract at Chelsea and they shipped him out for the last 3 years. Anybody that has that has got to be shocking for your confidence, you know, because you don't feel wanted. And I think anywhere, if they'd assign him on a permanent deal, whether it be Stoke or Liverpool, and they play him enough and they play to his strengths, I think he'll show you 100% what he's about. Don't forget that those first 4 or 5 weeks of last season when we were, you know, winning at the likes of Arsenal, City, Liverpool, he was an instrumental part. You know, I remember his goal against City.
Yeah.
And I think he's always starts off on the right foot and then he tails off because he loses interest. And I think this year, finally, with Conte's system, the fact that they play that position of, you know, the 5-3-5-2, whichever one you want to look at it, it works for him because it gives him that roll down the right hand side to be free and run, and that's what he does best. And he's been fantastic this year. But it's like I said, it's strange that he's actually showing it all year, because he's actually wanted by the manager. He's actually given his chance to prove his worth to the club that signed him to that long contract. And he's been, you know, one of the best right wing backs, right wingers, whatever you want to call it, all season long. So I think from a West Ham point of view, he never said anything to annoy us. He never did anything to it. I think we would have appreciated maybe to see a bit more effort from him sometimes. But it's totally understandable why he felt the way that he did. You know, and good luck to him that he's doing well at Chelsea. So I don't really think he'd see much stick whatsoever on Monday night.
He's just one of the many reasons why I can't stand Chelsea. They buy up all these like young, talented players and they just send them all out on loan, and if they have like successful spells and like, all right, we'll give you a shot, and if for whatever reason they don't, they kind of just dump them and their career's over. But I guess it'll at least be interesting in that sense that he'll be coming back. And if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that like Willian would see the bench because Victor Moses was playing so well, I would have called you crazy.
I would have called you a lot worse, but that's the thing. Victor Moses is just straight up a motivation issue. That's all it is. It's no coincidence that the three teams Tom mentioned that he played well against were all big teams. He plays well against the big teams because he was motivated to play them. He wanted to prove that he was good enough. In every other game he played for us where he was facing a not so big team, one of the non-bigger boys, whatever you want to call them, like he just didn't have the motivation. You can compare him very directly to someone like Romelu Lukaku, who's someone else Chelsea hoovered up in their great youth buying ways. And he had motivation. He went to West Brom and he was motivated to prove himself. He went to Everton, he was motivated to prove himself. And he has. He's proved himself consistently. Whereas Victor Moses has proved himself for, what, 6 months now? Like, he plays well against big teams and no one else. I wouldn't surprise me, to be honest with you, if next season we see him completely drop out of form again because he's just lost all of his motivation. And I've got nothing against the guy. I really don't. I think he's very talented. I just think he just doesn't have... I don't think he has what it takes to compete consistently at the top level mentally.
I think I read somewhere today that Payet said he was the probably one of the most talented people other than himself on the team from last year. Which is a
don't mention his name, John. Just don't mention his name.
I'm sorry.
It's very much like him to be like, oh, he's one of the most talented players here, apart from me. Apart from me, I am the best here.
He said it in French. It sounded much better in that language. I got another call here. We're going to bring him on. Hello there. Welcome to the Ironworks.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Oh, my God. It's
Oh, God.
Man like Shorji, yeah?
Man like Shorji, yeah.
Reporting for duty. Did you call up to talk about the Arsenal?
No, I didn't. I called to listen in. Wherever necessary.
Well, we appreciate that. While you're on the phone.
What a man. Does what he wants. Shorja. Man like Shorja just rolls up. He's like, I phoned so I could hear you. What a man.
He calls up the show just so he can listen to it. Shorja, I got a question for you. Who's better, Sanchez or Andy Carroll? Go.
Who's better, Alexis Sanchez or Andy Carroll? Based on current form, I think Alexis Sanchez is better.
Incorrect.
Based on current form.
So you got your first question wrong.
Two completely different type of players.
Yeah, but Andy Carroll's still better. Name one way in which Sanchez is better. Andy Carroll is taller. He has better fashion sense. He doesn't talk
better
about his dogs all the time. He's probably faster.
Well,
what a man, Andy Carroll.
I don't know if you've seen Alexis Sanchez's Instagram feed, but Sanchez does have better dogs.
Nah, mate. Incorrect. I don't even know if Andy Carroll has dogs. He does. I bet.
Exactly.
Andy Carroll does.
So having two dogs is better than having no dog. Am I wrong?
Mate, Sanchez doesn't even have a beard, fam. What are you talking about?
We have tailed off here.
I put Sanchez in the same category as Hector Bellerin, Benavidez.
Pace merchant.
Pace merchant all the way. All right. Well, I guess the other question I was going to have for the Chelsea match is, like, what do we do about Kiate? A lot of people are saying if we did have everybody on the pitch, I guess it kind of changes with Antonio not going to be able to play. But some people are calling for Obiang and Kiate to kind of take those defensive midfield roles and Noble to sit on the bench. Do you agree or disagree? Go.
I've been banging on the same drum for weeks. I wouldn't say months, but weeks. It's, you know, I love Noble. I for what he's done for the club, for the love that he has. I genuinely, I love and respect him as a player and as a person. I think he's an absolute diamond. But I feel as if when Kouyaté and Obiang play together, I feel like they give us just that little extra in midfield. And I think it really showed when Kouyaté was away at the African Cup of Nations. We did lack in midfield at times. And he offers that energy going forward, and he offers that just that real work engine in the middle. I mean, Pedro Obiang's been fantastic all season long. I mean, he's been one of my hammers of the year, and there's no way that boy is being dropped from the team. And really, again, it's down to selection choices, whether Slaven wants to go with three in the middle. He may do against Chelsea. Or he may actually even match up the same, maybe 5-3-2, and have Kouyaté in as a centre-back for Monday night. I still don't think that in Slaven's head, he really knows what his best formation is and what players should play where. But for me, it's not a question of dropping Noble. Like I said, we can have this conversation all night long, and we could have it till the cows come home. But he will still be playing because he will be Slaven's first choice in that team sheet. You know, he's his captain, and he will be playing. But I as a fan, looking at it from a team, like from the perspective of wanting to do well, I think that having Kouyaté in the middle and just being that engine room, I think he just offers us so much more, especially going forward and especially in defence. Although saying that, he did give away a penalty against Watford, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess I'm forced to agree with you. And I think that's probably one of Slaven's weak areas is putting out a very tactical lineup. He's almost very stubborn. You know what I mean? Like when things are clearly, like, for instance, we saw Antonio up front one match, and then the next match he had a horrible game, and then the next match he was right back there having a subpar game. So, I mean, I think he's just very stubborn in that regard. I think tactically, but he's you know, there are two schools of thought on this, right, for managers. They're either people think that they're the glue that holds the ship together and that they're awesome, or on the other side, they think, you know, they're really just there to be the sheriff of a little township of players. I think Slaven is kind of falls into that regard, where he's so good with the team and managing the team, but tactically, I think he's kind of been like a little all over the place. He doesn't really know what he's doing yet, and I get injuries have been a problem, but it's just a little frustrating to watch sometimes, especially from an outside perspective.
Like you say, injuries haven't helped, but also the fact that he doesn't buy his own players doesn't help as well. He has to roll up and just get what he's given and make something out of it.
Right.
For me, Kiate starts at right back as a strict right back, and I would limit his duties to purely being a defender and playing the ball as simply as possible, because I fear that if you were to play him in the middle, whether it be in a back three or in a midfield two, I fear that his inability to stay positionally in the right position, that's a terrible sentence. I've said it now, it's live. his inability, it's on iTunes, subscribe. His inability to be in the right position and just wander about wherever he flipping wanders will absolutely annihilate us. You put Kante in that hole, you put, even, mate, if they play Cesc Fabregas in that hole, he will destroy Kiate. Kiate wouldn't even know where he was half the time, and that could be huge for me. So I would play him at right back, and specifically at right back, and just say, be defensive, play the ball as simply as possible, and just limit him to that. which is demoralizing. But I think against a team like Chelsea, if we're going to stand a chance, it's the only way we're going to stand a chance.
Well, let's get a caller's perspective. We got someone else on the line. Hello, sir, ma'am. How are you today? This is the Iron Worker.
I'm good, guys. How are you guys today?
Oh, I know that voice.
Oh, mate.
That's Handsome Pete.
That was, yes. It would be a wild Pete, would it?
Yeah.
What's going on, Pete?
How you guys doing?
Good. We've been on for 50 minutes. We got 5 minutes to
all
go.
All right. Oh boy. Have you guys talked about Carroll yet? About him possibly going to China?
Yeah, exhaustively, I suppose. What's your take on it? Go ahead.
Well, I don't. It seems like I read two different things. One thing saying that there was never serious interest, and then you have a document saying that, oh yeah, we give you permission to go find a club for you. It just, I don't know. It just seems like more shady dealing by the board myself. But you know, it's like, hey, we might be able to get £30 million for him, but oh no, we didn't. Just kidding. So
yeah,
I don't know. It
I
just seems very
shady board for the last few minutes. That's absolutely been their MO. And I also don't, you know, from their players, from their interviews on their website to posting their own transfer rumors to doing things like that, where there's paperwork just surfacing about potential deals.
I always thought it was great. It's one of those things where, you know, I think it's incredibly naive of them to put something like that in writing and to send it to somebody, because like, this is a big deal. I mean, this is the British press. It's going to come out. Like, it's not going to remain hidden or secret, but somebody's going to get a hold of it, and somebody's going to like take a picture of their cell phone or scan it or something. And it's going to hit the papers, and they can talk about, well, we never did that all they want. But when they have like an email or something, it's like one of those things. It's like, you know, having worked in management for years, let me tell you, you never put anything in the email you want read at a hearing. And you know, it's the same kind of philosophy you should take when you're doing the transfer stuff. Don't put anything you don't want on the front page of a newspaper, because it's going to end up there.
So I mean, Charlie,
I feel like that's something, you know, that's a lesson the board, specifically David Sullivan, would do well to learn. Is just, you know, keep your trap shut from time to time, because you know, we talk about leaks. That man is a walking, talking leak. He loves the sound of his own voice and speaks a bit too much about everything all of the time. I'm very thankful for them for a lot of reasons, but you know, it's time to start answering questions about the money, basically.
Yep.
Sorry, go on.
I generally think this whole like transfer to China thing is a trial balloon they sent out to see how the fans would react, and if everybody was all up in arms and ready to like, you know, burn the London Stadium down with torches and pitchforks, I think they would be like, oh, we were kidding, we weren't going to sell them, you know. But if everyone's like, man, whatever, you know, I think they would totally would be like, yeah, that was our plan all along. So,
do you know what? For me, I said it earlier on in the show. If David Sullivan and David Gold have got a chance to sell Andy Carroll for $30 million, when we only signed him for what, 10, 15, I think, Charlie?
15, yeah.
They would chew your hand off for it. I think they would sell him in an instant. And I think that, personally, I do think that, yes, they were speaking to Chinese clubs, but I don't think they maybe there was maybe too much unrest this window. And because of what happened with Piatt, the fans could be left saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, you've shafted us yet again with the Carroll situation. But I think when that Chinese transfer window reopens, I don't know when it opens, but I still think that as long as the money's there for him, I still think that they'll take that money for him. But as I've said, I wouldn't be abject to him going either.
This is a little bit of a different perspective on it, but I don't understand why the Chinese clubs would want him. Like, I understand he's, like you say, probably the best player in the world in the air, I think, anyway. I genuinely cannot name another player as good as him in the air. But, like, they have all the money in the world, and they choose to buy Andy Carroll. Good job, guys. Your league is going to last so long with that logic. Well done. Nail it.
Maybe they only play half the year. On that note, thank you so much for listening. This is the first episode, the debut. Plenty more to come. Subscribe to us on iTunes, download, visit us at bracethehammer.com. We're pumping out stuff all day, all week long for you. And we'll see you next Thursday, same time. Thank you very much to Charlie. Thank you to Tommy. You guys have a wonderful
day. No worries. Yeah, you too. Right. See you later.
All right. Bye. Take care. Bye.
And let's go here.
Good long throw there by Patton. Holton was really stretching for that one. First jumping well for it. Billy Bond. Oh, no! My ball! That's
it! Four coming in here for West Ham. Going to fall to one of them. It just might be Colton's goal. Bounce!
Players cross. Over Cunningham. De Canio! Oh, I do not believe
it! Antonio is bursting forward again, and he's beaten two, and he's beaten three, and he's clean through! And
and when I say my family, that's what I mean. Every West Ham fan out there is my family. And thank you. And we'll see you next season.